shoot me in the foot. I gotta make the rent.
Hour two kicking off here in the Fan Run Studios. Let's hit some hour two headlines. Get us started, Cameron.
All right. I guess we might as well keep the people arrested for weed going.
Okay.
As Iman Shumpert was arrested at the Dallas airport, Fort Worth airport, on Saturday, apparently, with felony weed charges for having 6.1 ounces of marijuana in his backpack. So he was arrested for felony weed possession. So
how much did he have?
6.1 ounces.
That's a lot, but could that theoretically just be for personal use and over a little bit? Like, was he
usually most legal states the amount you can have is like an ounce?
Yeah.
So like
six a lot, especially
how many grams is 6 ounces?
You don't have to do the math for him. It's just a lot.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. It's a lot of weed. It's a lot of weed. And he was flying?
Yeah, it was in his backpack at like an airport. So
I thought it was in his back pocket.
No, backpack.
No, you can't fit 6 ounces.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why I wanted to know how many grams it was. Because I was like, does he have the biggest pockets in the world?
Yeah, no, you can't fit. I mean, there's what? I mean, is it 26, 27 grams in an ounce? Is that how that works?
Yeah, somewhere in there, if I remember correctly.
So six of those would be a lot.
He
looked pretty high in his mugshot,
too. 160 grams of...
Yeah.
That's all for personal use. Like,
Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine he's rolling around with an entourage, but I just can't imagine him selling weed. I mean, that's not enough weed to be out there selling. Like, he doesn't need money.
It could just be money for him and his boys.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They got Montrezl Harrell with, like, what he had in the trunk. It was like enough. They had him treated like a big kingpin, but it was like probably just enough for like him to have for a while. And then three or four of his friends, like they tried to make it paint like he was some big kingpin, like a pound of weed or something. Like,
so you hit over 168 grams.
Shumpert had a lot, but not enough to like, again, he's not here selling.
Yeah, he's probably not selling. He probably just has it on deck at all times.
Right. So he's not like selling 3 or 4 ounces of pop. Like, yeah, he's not doing that, trying to make couple hundred bucks,
but also like
it's dumb to fly with. I mean,
bro,
it's
come
pretty
on,
stupid.
Why do you have that much in an airport?
Yeah, I mean, it's
tone it down if you're gonna do that.
Who thought that? Like, why'd you think that was a good idea, Amon?
You would think
you've played for 16 different teams. You've traveled a lot.
I want to know how exactly he got caught. If TSA got him, if there was a dog walking around, or what?
Sure, someone was just like, "Hey, do you smell the 168 grams of weed coming from this guy's backpack?" it's spilling out.
While Brittany Griner's in prison.
Yeah.
This is really just showing how great America is, because Shumpert will probably just get, like, probation.
Yeah.
Like, he will play for at least 2 NBA teams this year.
No, he won't.
No.
He's been out of the league for a while. Right? Well, I mean, he hasn't played the last couple of years.
He could face up to 2 years behind bars, right? And a $10,000
fine. Shumpert got traded this offseason. I don't think he's been playing in the league.
I don't think he has.
He's out.
Who am I thinking of?
I don't know who you're thinking of. I'm pretty sure Shumpert
You're thinking of Shumpert from Dancing with the Stars.
Which is the same guy, but
who got traded this offseason to their 16th different team?
Yeah,
you talking about Ish Smith, maybe?
Yes,
yeah.
Amon Shumpert and Ish Smith, to me, are the same person
because they have an I and S in their name.
Probably because they're role players with with similar enough letters.
Shumpert was at least a starter before, and got a championship.
Yeah,
he's got that going for him. But, yeah, no, he hasn't played since he got 2 games in, the bubble in 2020. So, yeah, he's out of the league.
Maybe this will just be enough to spark his comeback.
No, I'm going to say
spark
it's
something,
not
but not a comeback.
Spark, yeah, not going to spark that comeback. Any other headlines, Cam?
Yeah. Deontay Johnson, Steelers wide receiver, just got his contract extension he was asking for.
Okay, what'd he get?
He got a 2-year, $36.71 million extension with $27 million guaranteed. He gets $19 million in year one, basically, you know, good financial security. And then, yeah, only about 2 years, and then he gets to hit the free agent market again. If the quarterback situation in Pittsburgh is not figured out by then.
What were the numbers again?
36.71
for 2 years?
Yep, for 2 years. $27 million guaranteed, and $19 million of it is in his first year.
I mean, that's his first big payday, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, good for him.
So, yeah. He's earned it as far as their usage rate over there, for sure.
Yeah, yeah, they're going to ride him into the ground.
Yeah, I think he had only one game where he didn't have five catches last year.
He's a good little PPR guy.
Yeah, oh, yeah. So he's getting paid a little bit for it, and, yeah, as is deserved.
The Dallas Cowboys, trying to get some help for their defense, have signed Anthony Barr to a contract, getting him from the Vikings, correct?
He was a free agent, but, yeah, he did play for the Vikings. Yeah, yes. Yeah.
I think the Vikings were trying to re-sign him, too, but he chose to go with the Cowboys. He any good anymore?
He's all right. He's not the all or the, you know, the Pro Bowl level he was in the past, but he's still got that pass rush and a little all right in coverage as well. So I think it's going to allow them to be a little more flexible with what they do with Parsons as far as letting him just purely rush the passer more.
30 years old, 72 tackles, 3 interceptions, 2.5 sacks in 11 games after missing all but 2 games of the torn pec in 2020. So I guess injuries have slowed him down a little bit. Yeah, but 4 Pro Bowls in his 8 years in Minnesota and now headed to Dallas. So, yeah, I mean, he's at least going to be a smart veteran you can have. I don't know how much of an impact he'll make.
Yeah,
but
he may just be like a third down guy you throw out there so Parsons can rush and you put him in coverage a little bit. So
yeah.
We'll see. But, yeah, it gives him a little bit of flexibility there.
Good for him.
Another headline here. Paige Buchers, the UConn women basketball star, has suffered another injury, and she will miss the year again. She tore her ACL in the pickup game, and, yeah, she's missing another year with an injury. As she went out last year and missed most of the year with an injury as well.
Same knee, or do we know?
I'm not positive.
Okay.
I never clicked on the.
Yeah, I just know. I mean, she tore ACL last year, like you said, right? I mean, she came back, but they went ahead and ruled her out for the whole entire season this time.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, she is she's a goner. They will not see her this year, and you know she's been one of the biggest stars as far as women's basketball sport and you know NIL deals and all that kind of stuff. So at least she's got a little money from that stuff already. But yeah, just not great.
I mean, she was going to be the number one pick, like, in the draft, right? Like, I mean, like, as a freshman year, she was the best player in the country, right?
Yeah,
I mean, like, she
yeah,
was supposed absolutely. To be that girl. Like, was she as good when she got back last year with her ACL? Like, I mean, 2 ACL injuries back-to-back seems like it would slow almost anyone down.
Yeah.
I don't mean this disrespectfully, but, like, maybe it slows you down less in the women's game, just since there's not as much athleticism required.
Yeah. Wasn't quite as good.
Yeah.
I think she had a couple different injuries last year, though, too, as well. I think she was just really banged up. But, yeah, just tough blow for her and that team this year. So we'll see, but we won't see her this year.
Well, that's tough for her.
Yep, absolutely.
It's tough for her. It's tough for UConn, too. Which ultimately,
yeah, they were a completely different team about their last year.
Yeah, I mean they were just a team.
Yeah,
which means they're going to be just a team this year too.
Which means they're getting beat.
Do we play them again this year?
I think so. I think they're coming to Tennessee.
Are they?
I want to say that I saw that last week.
I doubt we already have the schedule out, right? Or do we have the schedule?
I don't think we have a schedule. I just think that was one of the games announced.
Okay. If so, I don't know. We'll talk some Tennessee football after the break. Just talking about Paige Buchers just made me yawn just then, so I need to go get us some energy. I'm trying to go through a caffeine cleanse.
Okay.
So if I'm yawning, it's because I'm trying to go through it. I just started today. I've drank a lot of caffeine a lot of soda the last couple of days. So next 4 weeks until football season, I'm going to try to go on a little cleanse.
Mm.
So if I get
tired,
it's going to
be rough for the movie theaters.
Well, I know. I've given myself one cheat day because there's only one movie that I'm going to go for sure see in the next couple weeks. So I'm like, on that night I can have my soda, but other than
is
that,
it bodies.
Yeah. Next Thursday or Friday I'm going to go see that, and otherwise that's. I'm
so
try
is
to,
that is that going to be in theaters around here or not?
Yeah. It was a limited release this week, and then full release next week. So
I also really want to see that.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go see it at the little local cinema.
Yeah. You keep saying that, and then you never go.
I went and saw the Marshall the Shell.
Oh, you did go
the other day.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
So I finally saw that. Yeah, it was very wholesome. And
yeah, that's what I said. It was
it was funny, but it went very serious and emotional. I was like, oh no, I'm not ready for this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shed a little tear.
Like I said, I had some kids and I had some old people there. Yeah. It was just kind of a nice
movie
for everybody, I guess. Did you realize how far off you were on The Voice, though, whenever you saw
the
movie?
Yeah, I'm very bad at The Voice.
Okay, good. As long as we got that.
Can you do The Voice again now?
No, I have to think about it. No, I don't want to attempt. No.
Will you please try again?
No, I think I'm all right.
I don't think anybody else knows what The Voice sounds like, so it doesn't really help.
Except you just pretend that I did it. But
what is The Voice, like a substantially weird or unique
No, it's just
voice?
Like a high-pitched, like...
I was impressed she talked in that voice the whole movie.
Was Marshall a girl?
It's a boy.
It's a girl actress, a woman actress, but it's supposed to be a boy, like...
Shell.
So is it like a, little little boy shell?
Yeah, it's supposed to be like the equivalent of like a 10-year-old kid, maybe, like a 9-year-old kid, 10-year-old kid. It's kind of what I thought.
What,
like,
what does this shell want? Like, what
his family
what
back.
Needs?
His family back.
Is that the conflict, then? His family's missing and he must find them?
Family basically got
So is this kind of like Finding Nemo, but with a shell?
But the opposite, because, or the same, goes on an adventure.
Yeah, he's not lost. He's got his grandma there.
Oh, use 60 minutes.
She a shell too.
Like Finding Nemo didn't do that.
And they use 60 minutes. 60
minutes. Grandma is also a shell.
They have humans and stuff there. And
they use like the show 60 minutes.
Yeah, there's a guy that lives like is like an Airbnb because he got divorced and was kicked out. So he's like living in the Airbnb with the shells, and they become friends. And he does a documentary on them, and then he's put them up on YouTube. And they love 60 Minutes, and then 60 Minutes reaches out to them, and they do an interview, and then eventually they're
able to... The Shells love 60 Minutes?
Yeah. They're like, we would sit down every night and watch the
show. Like a big personality trait of the Shells. Like, they're really... Maybe that's just who's keeping 60 Minutes alive.
They love the grandma loves the main woman.
She'd be like, grandma, do the noise.
Yeah. All the family would get together and watch 60 Minutes.
This sounds like a fever dream of
it. It was so ridiculous, but I liked it.
It's a weird movie.
I want to see it.
It's a weird movie. Let's go to break. It's Talk Sports on Fan Run Radio. The segment's brought to you by Linderman Sports Medicine. If you're not active right now because of any discomfort or pain that is limiting any of your activities. My heel's hurting, guys. I probably should be limiting my activities, but with this hurt heel, still going to go play basketball tonight. Got a bum thumb. But although last week, didn't shoot any jumpers. Just
fight through adversity.
Tacking the rim.
Memphis.
I need to. I wonder what she would tell me for heel pain. She'd probably just be like, hey, can you try resting it at first?
Well, she'd probably
resting it.
Was it
rice? Is that what it's called? Like rest and
rest.
Some ice.
Ice.
Was it compression?
Compression and elevation.
Was compression the other thing? What does compression mean? Just like put something on,
squeeze
like wrap it?
Wrap it,
okay.
Maybe?
Yeah.
Just squeeze it all day.
Maybe that's what she would tell me at first. Like, hey, let's try a little rice first. If it doesn't get better.
So that's what she'd tell you for the heel, maybe. But what about the thumb,
the thumb
and the
be
wrist
like rest
and the
too.
Hamstring and the
back?
The back,
back,
the shoulder, left
heart,
ear.
Don't forget heart.
Those are tough to mend.
Wish you could mend one of those. Check out the amazing work being done by Dr. Laura Linderman at Linderman Sports Medicine, located in Memphis. People come from all over Tennessee and beyond to get back in the game of life without surgery. LindermanSportsMedicine.com. LindermanSportsMedicine.com. Forced Tennessee topic of the day is what, boys? Tennessee football. Practice. Vols. Updates. Lynn J. Dixon, shout out to the Dixheads out there as he showed up on the practice field.
I feel like that's got to be a pretty easy position to work someone in at, right?
Yeah, like, I mean, it's a position of need. It's one you're worried about, but also one like, hey, you got a couple reads here, and can you make a cut, and can you run fast in a straight line?
I mean, at the end of the day, like, run scheme is run scheme. Like, here's a power run. It's designed for the A-gap. Like, here's a power concept. It's designed for the B-gap. Like, here's buck sweep. We want you running off the tackle. Well, it really doesn't change that much.
Then all of a sudden, like, you know.
Dependent. I mean, the hardest thing to pick up will probably be alignment, pace, and pass protection responsibility. So I imagine that, you know, you're not going to ask him to do a lot of pass protection early on. While still getting worked in.
Is that our biggest concern with our newcomers, especially like guys who have transferred from other places who maybe haven't played a lot, like Brew McCoy and like Lynn J. Dixon, like pace and being in good enough shape? Because, you know, that was the big takeaway from Brew McCoy was like, hey, you know, he's got to get in better shape. I feel like at Tennessee you have to be in like exquisite shape, especially like on offense, right? Because Charlie pointed out, like, we don't rotate a lot of receivers in on drives because we don't really have time because we go too fast. Like,
yeah, I mean, well, you don't want to sub people out and then give the defense the right. opportunity to slow you down and make substitutions.
Right. Like, you want to go as fast as possible. You want to finish your drive. And I don't know what Tennessee's number is, like, realistically, what they consider a good drive. I would imagine they're trying not to have too many go over 3 minutes, though. Like, I mean, I would say, like, an eight-play, two-and-a-half-minute drive is probably, like, perfect for them. Now, obviously, they want to hit big plays.
I think we're at three plays a minute.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's basically
year,
20 seconds.
2.99
yeah.
plays a minute, so ideally you have, like, an 8-to-10-play touchdown drive that lasts 2.5 to 3.5 minutes at most. Like, that would be, I think, what Josh Heupel's after.
Okay. And that's tough. Especially, I'd imagine, if you're coming from somewhere that doesn't play that way. And even if they don't play that way, like if you haven't played. Because, again, both of those guys who I think we both expect to be contributors, Brew McCoy and now Lynn J. Dixon, like they haven't really had to do that. Especially, you know, Dixon, who's getting here and already a couple days behind.
Absolutely.
How long does it take to get into that kind of shape? On the football field. They always talk about playing yourself into, like, football shape and, like, playing shape. How long does that take? Is that a reasonable goal to be able to, like, train yourself to do that within a month?
I think it all – it's pretty person-dependent, honestly. Yeah, it depends on what kind of shape you, like, came in. You know, it depends on how you take care of yourself away from the facility in the off season. Yeah. I don't think you can just put a square number on it necessarily.
Well, I know, like, back in the day, like, all these professional sports and probably college too, but mostly professional sports, like, these guys had, like, spare jobs, other jobs they'd pick up in, like, the offseason, and the training camp was usually meant to get guys into shape. Now, the expectation pretty much in every sport, unless you're Luka Doncic, is like, hey, you gotta, like, stay ready to go year-round. Guys don't really have to come in and get into shape too often when it comes time for, like, training camp, because I think the expectation, especially if you're a professional — so maybe it's a little bit easier if you're college, but if you're a professional, the expectation is, like, you stay in shape year-round. You stay ready to go all the time. Like, you should be doing training, or else we're going to clown you like James Harden. We're going to call you fat.
Absolutely.
Beginning of the year, we're going to say you have a fat suit on that you're going to take off whenever you get to a new team. But, like, it also could just be like, hey, I'm playing myself into shape. But, like, the expectation now as an athlete is you got to kind of stay in that year-round. So maybe we've lost the idea.
Yeah, hopefully, ideally, he's came in a baseline level of conditioning, and he just has to take those next couple steps to get to not only, like, back to his normal football step or shape, but, like, also to where, you know, like, Heupel and this offense requires of you. And I'd say that's possible in a month if he came in a decent level of conditioning already, just because I'm sure this coaching staff already has a pretty solid, like, conditioning plan in place for most players. Since they've been running this kind of system for a while, they kind of figure out, you know, kind of what works and what doesn't and what kind of gets people there and what they need.
And you're probably not asking a ton from Lynn J. Dixon early on, at least. Like you said, you expect him to surpass that double-digit carries mark against Ball State, which makes
touches,
sense.
Touches. I think he's going to be in part of the pass game, too. Just wanted to clarify that. Like, maybe 7 carries, three catches, something like that.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, which makes sense given the fact that it's Ball State and you're a 31.5-point favorite. Josh Heupel has said that ideally, you know, 75 to 85 plays a game is where he wants his offense at.
Okay.
So if he's playing, you know, if the offense is playing 75 or is on the field 75 to, or we'll say 80 times, right? Mm-hmm. Right in that middle. Realistically, with Jabari Small being the clear cut one and with, you know, two freshmen both being right there and competing for playing time, especially, you know, Williams, and with Jalen Wright being a guy that the coaching staff, you know, likes to a certain extent. If there are 80 plays to go around, I mean, Lynn J. Dixon's probably getting
10's probably too much.
15.
Then. I don't. You
snaps
getting snaps, yeah, and not getting the ball over time. I mean,
maybe like.
Do you think?
I would say more against Ball State, obviously, because you know that's a game that everyone's going to get to play more. But
do we think, you know, that the freshmen 15, are going to be? Do we think the freshmen are going to be prioritized over him? Because I kind of don't think they will. I would say you're more likely to ride this guy than like worry about your freshmen in Ball State. Like your freshman games to me are like week 3, and then whatever, you know, bot game you have to break up your SEC schedule.
Well,
right?
I just think that
to me that's the freshman game, because I think you brought this guy here to be a contributor, and also, like, you want to, You can't treat the first game strictly like preseason, right? Like you can't like a bought game, if you will. The first game is a tune-up game for Pittsburgh. Like you gotta hit the ground running for Pittsburgh. Like you have to kind of have an idea of the, you know, the two running backs that you can count on, the five receivers you can count on, and like you know which cornerbacks and defensive backs you're gonna rotate. So I wouldn't think the first game is a straight up like empty the bench scenario until
I'm saying. I just think that Justin Williams-Thomas has a pretty decent chance to be a part of this rotation
from the get-go. Okay,
that's just like what some of the talk around him was, at least in the beginning, and you know throughout camp, like we've seen that those two freshmen are both getting opportunities.
Yeah, but Dixon wasn't there at the beginning of camp, and I just think that they brought him here to be at the very least a third down back, like third down option, a guy that can make some big plays, maybe the 10 touches, which, you know, if you're getting 80 snaps, is basically getting him the ball 12.5% of the time. Maybe that's too much. Maybe that number's a little high. But I would be shocked if the freshman cut into it. If it's just like, hey, Hooker throws the ball 50 of those 80 reps, and then there weren't 10 touches or 12 touches or whatever to go around for, you know, a backup running back, that would be less surprising. But with Ball State, I imagine that you do your business in the first half, maybe the first two and a half quarters, three quarters. And then the fourth quarter, you're basically running the clock out, just trying to run the ball.
Yeah.
And I think that Dixon is just going to be a factor. And the freshmen might be. They might be. But I would be shocked if they were, like, in the early part of the season. That's something more to me that you do when you get to November. That's kind of it. Now, with Squirrel White, maybe it's different, right? Maybe he's a freshman that you look at and you're like, okay, this guy's going to be a factor here, and we're going to get him on the field early and try to have him ready by Pittsburgh. Like, I think he's a little bit different.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are just a couple freshmen that are earning or going to maybe earn early playing time. And
I agree. Just running back wasn't what I was thinking of.
Oh, see, I guess that's just a position that I kind of thought that one of those two, whether it's Dylan Sampson or whether it's Justin Williams-Thomas, like, finds their way into the rotation.
Yeah. And again,
but maybe, I mean, you know, maybe with Lynn J. Dixon, like, that does change, and maybe bringing him in is also an indication that those guys won't be a part of the rotation, and that's why you needed Lynn J. Dixon.
I mean, Thomas was a highly rated guy, right? I mean, he was
a higher four-star.
Okay. Yeah, he's a top 300 player, so, I mean, maybe they have hopes for him to come in right away, maybe.
I think that running back is one of, if not the easiest positions to play as a freshman.
For sure. For sure.
Because, again, a lot of it just comes down to the natural ability and understanding of run schemes and how to, you know, diagnose the defense in real time. Like how to read linebackers and make the correct reads based off of, you know, the defensive positioning.
I think that, and maybe I'm wrong, but I think that for me, the running back position's easy to pick up, but I also think it's harder to gain trust when it comes to, like, pass protection and stuff. Like, I feel like that's going to be a pretty important part. Maybe not so much in Tennessee's offense where, you know, you have a lot of quick hitters on offense, but, like, you got to be willing to pass block, and I just think that's harder for freshman running backs unless you're special. And maybe one of these guys are, but I think that's, like, a hard thing to, like, earn trust on early in the year. I feel like that's something that takes more reps and practice and getting your body ready.
That's definitely the biggest obstacle to it. But and with Tennessee, too, last year, I think when you really get into, like, the advanced metrics of things, their pass blocking was towards the bottom of the country, like in the hundreds.
Really?
So you have to be more reliant on the running backs then, you know, because you might need them if you want to try to set up your shot plays, basically.
Especially when you look in, like, Glenn Ellerbe, you know, talked today and said, you know, still not settled on what we're doing on the offensive line at the tackle position. It was basically like, yeah, Darnell Wright, we all know, like, turned into kind of a monster last year at right tackle. And Ellerbe's like, well, I'm not all settled on him on the right side just yet. It's basically like, we got to find our best two tackles. So, point being, we have one tackle that we feel good about right now. That makes a pass blocking running back a little bit more important if you can put him over there on that side of your lesser tackle.
Yeah.
Maybe have a tight end there, too. I don't know. But, like, the tackle position, you got one guy in Darnell Wright that I think everyone at Tennessee now feels comfortable with and feels confident in. At least I do. But you don't know what side he's going to play on. And then, obviously, you don't know who's holding down that other tackle position just yet. That's a problem. Or at least a concern. And I think just that being, you know, having that related to their running back position, it affects everything just because, you know, you're going to maybe ask your running backs to block a little bit more than they ideally would.
Yep.
We'll continue the conversation around college football after the break. It's Talk Sports on Fan Run Radio. We made fun of Rutgers yesterday, and then I saw the same thing apparently going on in the Colombian Costco, where you can also get season tickets for.
So I don't want to burst your bubble, because it would be fun to laugh at South Carolina for this.
Uh-huh.
Did some further research on that, because okay. I saw that too. Those are for one game.
Oh.
So those are, you can buy it at Costco, one game only. And it's,
this isn't
in
a deal at all, then.
It's in a certain section.
Yeah, I see,
like,
that.
So you can choose from like six sections. You can choose from.
I see that now. You're basically
games,
up,
you're
basically all upper level on the home sideline, and you can use any game. Tennessee's one of them.
Yeah.
Missouri, Texas A&M. Basically, you can pick any one game.
And
except
you will
Georgia,
receive,
I guess, if they're at home. I don't know.
You get your tickets, parking, and all you can eat concessions.
Still not bad. $90 for two tickets and all that.
All you can eat concessions. I'm racking it up.
Now, Rutgers, though, was season tickets.
Yes.
Though. Rutgers was actually season tickets. South Carolina's just for one game.
Apparently, there are more than just those two schools on selling tickets on Costco, too.
So Costco just struck a deal with all these schools. Dear God, I hope this doesn't come out for us. We don't have a Costco here, right? Like, it's got a Sam's Club.
No, we have a Costco.
We do have a Costco. Where's our Costco at? Where's Costco?
It's like out west.
I'm pretty sure
it's
we
like
have
closer
one
to
though.
You.
Let me Google.
Oh, I know where it's at. Sure. Over there, off the Farragut exit, right?
I think so.
I think I know where it's at too.
But so I went to go try to find these tickets because I was like, actually, I will buy this right now for the Tennessee South Carolina game if I'm getting all you can eat concessions and everything.
Yeah. Do we have any?
I couldn't find those online, but also online they listen the same deal for Louisville football. But for two South End Zone tickets, for that's $69.99.
Okay.
Fresno State is offering the same deal for $74.99. Two premium bench tickets.
Oh.
Ooh.
And Rutgers, again, yeah, theirs is on there. But then there's also Sacramento FC, Atlanta United, and like two other soccer teams, DC United on there too.
I mean, it is kind of cool to kind of have a throwback, because I do hate that it seems like, you know, you have to buy all your tickets digitally now. It is nice to just have them in your face sometimes, where you can just easily go pick up something while you're at the store and go swipe it. Like, if we sold tickets to things at grocery stores, I'd probably buy them often whenever I was in there. Yeah, I'll go catch a basketball game later. Here we go. Just throw it in there with the Coca-Cola. Let's go.
Like, oh, they're at concert tonight? All right.
Yeah, concert tickets would actually probably work good because, like, there's probably a lot of concerts here that people don't know about.
I always miss
If them. I went to Kroger and there was an aisle that was just tickets, I would probably accidentally just buy one every time.
See, I don't know if you can do that. Can you put it a full aisle? Because I feel like you need to just put it with the other things.
Maybe not an aisle, but maybe, you know, like the gift card things they have, or they just a little dry section. You can do that.
I would say, like, have one side be bread and the other side be tickets.
See, I would say the opposite. You know how every now and then they'll put stuff at the end of the aisle? That's not really like where that is, but, like, you know, just convenient stuff. Like, oh, you can grab like a 2-liter without having to go all the way down, like chips or something.
Well, sometimes the gift cards are like that. That's what I was thinking of in my head.
Yeah. The gift card usually has like their own section, like up there in the front, but I'm thinking just like at the end of aisles, like, here's like three rows of tickets. Like, whenever you look, oh, wow, so and so's in town. I didn't know that.
Yeah. No, yeah.
That'd be kind of cool. I understand why places don't do that, because most of them, like, will sell online, but still.
But that would be
that's
kind of
convenient.
Oh, I mean,
this is kind of nice for South Carolina to do, actually.
Yeah, people are kind of hating on these schools. I like it. I like the move.
It's funny. For more so, it's just funny that Rutgers was having to sell season tickets there at, like, less than $100 of face value.
Yeah, no, that was funny.
South Carolina selling single game tickets, two of them for $100 with all that. It's not necessarily funny. I would say it's more so just like, you know, just a.
It's a cool deal.
Yeah, but it's still easy to make fun of South Carolina.
I think it's a good idea, honestly.
No, it is a good idea. It's up to 40% off, and I guess if I was a ticket sales guy, like in the South Carolina ticket office, I'd be a little upset about it. But it's a good way to try to fill up the seats.
Mm-hmm.
Parking, too? That's nice. That's clutch.
Not bad. Yeah,
I'd go to so many more games if I had, like, a parking pass. How much do you have to pay for a parking pass? I can't call there and get like lower level season tickets and get a parking pass, right? You have to be like a higher level donor to get like an actual parking pass over there.
Important.
Like when you guys bought season tickets, you didn't get a parking pass attached to it, right?
We did not.
It bothers me about the Titans too.
We had parking for the Titans forever, and then we just got rid of it.
What'd you have? You had the option to just pay extra for it, or what?
I don't really remember how it worked. Honestly, I was just young and along for the ride.
Because I'm not able to buy it. And I mean, I have lower-level tickets.
Do you have PSLs, too?
Yeah, I mean, I have PSLs and lower-level tickets, but they said there's no option for me to buy parking.
I don't know.
Maybe that changes when they build the new stadium in a couple years, but like...
Maybe we just had that option because that was also a while ago.
Yeah, I mean, you guys were a part of the... We were in the first... You were in there? Yeah, so maybe that was a part of it.
Yeah, we're just a little bit better than you, I guess. We're just founding PSL members. You know, we just hold higher status.
Yeah, seems a little weird that you would give up your parking pass. But what do you guys do? Just park in, like, the garage, I guess, somewhere? I know where you park.
We park downtown.
We don't tailgate anymore. Did you used to tailgate back in the day?
We tailgated back in the day, but...
Okay. That's right.
It got...
It's too much of a hassle to do that.
Yeah, for NFL games. It just... Because we would always go to like my brother's games on Friday nights, and then it got to the point where we would go to my games on Friday nights and then my brother's games on Saturday and then still go to the Titans game Sunday, because my parents went to every one of my brother's games in college for like
four years. You got good supportive parents.
Yeah, they are. They're great parents.
Shout out to them. Because there's no chance in hell I'm driving to Indianapolis for a football game and then getting back for like
the
Titans game. I gotta pick one or the other.
Had schools in Upstate New York, Orlando, and California, and North Carolina.
So lower level, like NCAA football, is already like given up on you know, having conferences based on geography. They had given up on that before.
Well, they're the Pioneer League, so you know they're everywhere.
Yeah, they had given up on that before.
Shout out
to the Big Ten,
to Harbaugh too. He got his start in San Diego in the Pioneer League.
Okay,
but kind of funny that San Diego. In San Diego, California, obviously. Butler in Indianapolis, Marist in upstate New York, and Stetson in DeLand, Florida, which is on...
These schools couldn't have been turning a profit.
No, definitely not.
Okay.
But yeah, they're... Stetson is like down by Daytona Beach. And they're just all in the same conference. Campbell in Buies Creek, North Carolina, they were in that conference. Davidson's in that conference.
Yeah.
It's absurd.
Yeah. No thanks. You think we can go to Costco? Because, I mean, I'll buy these two tickets for the Tennessee game.
You have a Costco membership?
Oh, yeah, you have to membership.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, already be
get
in.
Somebody in South Carolina to pick these up. I mean, it wouldn't be a bad deal to go to Columbia. It's going to be an important game for Tennessee.
Yeah.
Tennessee-South Carolina is going to be a big game this year. Stick with us. It's Talk Sports on Fan Run Radio.
I'm away from L.A. back to Knoxville. I found out those bright lights ain't where I belong. From a phone booth.
Tennessee, South Carolina in November. It's going to be an important game. Where do you rank that in terms of Tennessee's most important games? Charlie? You have to give me the exact number. We can kind of work through this. Like, it's...
So, Florida's more important.
Okay, Florida's more important.
LSU, more important.
Okay. When you're saying more important, are you also saying a more competitive game as well? Because I would say this, I would say South Carolina's more important than LSU. Because it's an East game. It's a game that's, again, against a rival. It's a late season game.
if,
so I don't know if that even matters, late season game, because obviously LSU, I mean, if you're 4-0, I mean, like, the difference between 5-0 is pretty huge before Alabama. And that could be a difference between a 2-game losing streak. So, okay, I'm just thinking this out loud. Keep going.
Yeah, I think that actually, that is a factor, the positioning. Mm-hmm. You don't want to drop 2 in a row.
Yeah. Yeah.
With South Carolina, too, I guess there is the factor of maybe they're less competitive than LSU.
Okay.
So you feel a little bit more comfortable about being able to beat South Carolina, therefore it feels a little bit less important. I would put Kentucky as the – maybe above LSU, too.
You put Kentucky above LSU?
I would put Florida as by far the most important game.
Okay. Agree.
Kentucky, I would put it probably 2.
I think I'd go Pittsburgh at 2.
I guess I was thinking through the lens of SEC. So, yeah, there's an argument for Pittsburgh at 2 as well. I would say Kentucky or Pittsburgh 2.
I just think you lose so much hype and you just get so deflated if you lose that Pittsburgh game.
It's a good point. So, yeah, with that being said, Pittsburgh above Kentucky, then Kentucky, and then LSU, and then South Carolina right there at 5.
Cam, you have any disagreements with that? Florida, Pittsburgh, Kentucky, LSU, and South Carolina is your 5 most important games of the season?
Mine would probably be Florida, then Kentucky, then Pittsburgh, then LSU, then South Carolina. Probably would be my order. I almost want to put one of the big boys in there, like the Georgia, Alabama, just because I feel like it's important to kind of see where you're at compared to them, but also, I'd rather win those other games, so I think that makes them more important.
Well, I would rather win the big games.
I mean, yes, yeah, but as far as I feel, more realistically,
sure, yeah,
those are games you should win, and you need to win more than beating Alabama or Georgia this year. But also, those are important measuring sticks. But yeah, I think that's my top 5 there. I do agree that Pittsburgh's big as far as keeping things moving, but also you can bounce back from that. I feel like if you win, you know, pretty much every other SEC game you're supposed to and still have a good year and it doesn't look as bad, you're just like, that was a bad loss. But you feel better about where you are in the SEC because I feel like it's important to finish 2nd in the East this year.
So Florida's clear-cut number 1.
Yeah. For me, and I guess Charlie on the same page.
Clear-cut number 1 for you as well?
Definitively. Without a doubt, the most important game. You have to beat Florida this year. Like, you have to turn that corner. And I don't know if that would be considered turning that corner or not, but that's a big step towards doing it, where you get past that mental block of Florida, where you have the new regime, like, get rid of all the past trauma, all the past chaos of the program, just flush all of it out. You know, that's what we're trying to do. Flush out the decade of dysfunction, basically, as Mark Nagy would call it, and move in a different direction. I think beating Florida is a key to that because...
What are you talking about, decade of dysfunction?
I mean, just from Fulmer until...
Mark Nagy, what are you talking about?
The guy that wrote that book.
What book?
Decade of Dysfunction.
Yeah, I'm kidding. That was a joke. He's been talking about that damn book for 5 years.
He has.
No offense.
No, well, I mean
a little.
Yeah,
trying to sell that book to them much. But either way, keep going with your point. Sorry. Just every time.
You just rattles me there.
Just every time.
Well, because I thought you were being serious for a second, which was even more baffling because I don't even know if I follow him, but I see it on Twitter like
see
once
that
a week.
Book all the time.
Somehow.
But yes, I understand.
Yeah, like
what
you're trying to put all that behind you and finally move in a non-chaotic direction, a respectable direction, and I think a lot of that, starts with beating Florida and getting to the point where you don't see Florida as the team that, they have our number. And, to change that viewpoint around, it starts with actually starting to beat Florida. And there's no better time to start beating Florida than right now as they are dealing with roster attrition, as they are dealing with a new coach, and you are a definitively better team.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think both of you are correct. It just feels gross for me to put them up there on that pedestal because I don't think of them in the same light. Like, I don't think of them as a Sounds crazy to say because I understand what the record is. Mm-hmm. And I understand that beating them is an accomplishment, and that's not something we take for granted. I know that that's what this season ultimately does come down to. But, like, when you've seen just such great Florida teams, then you see this one.
Yeah.
Like, it's a game you should win. I don't even know if it's, on paper, at least what I think this Florida team is going to be this year, I don't even know if it is a signature win. I do think it's important, though, because, like you said, mm-hmm. it's a statement win. It's a showing that you're at least above Billy Napier. I think losing to them would be catastrophic. I think losing would be much worse than beating them would be great, personally. But, no, it's probably the biggest game. It's your first SEC game. It's your true home opener. Yeah. It still carries enough weight nationally where people will pay attention. At the very least, like, you should have a great Tennessee crowd that gets attention, right? Like, it should be a great atmosphere that people across the country flip over to that game and see a pretty hype Neyland Stadium. It should be out for blood.
For sure.
Yeah, and I, like you said, you don't think it would be a signature win. It wouldn't be nationally, but it would mean everything to not only the fan base, but to the team.
Yeah, it would. It would mean a lot to the fan base. And again, it's one of those things that losing would be probably five times worse than winning would be cool. The tailspin after losing to this team would have people in shambles heading into the bye week. And I've lived enough of those scenarios as a Tennessee fan where you lose to them early in the season and just kind of lose your hope and your hype for the season. So Florida's number one.
And if those two teams played in, generic Walmart jerseys, like if you weren't playing against Florida, if you just took those two rosters and compared them in a game-like scenario, how would this play out? I'd imagine Tennessee would be a pretty sizable favorite. It's not necessarily like double digits or anything like that, but, I think they'd be at least a touchdown favorite. And I think they'll still probably be, 4.5, 5.5?
I don't know. Cam, who'd you have as your second most important game?
I had Kentucky.
Okay.
Just because I think it's important to finish second in the East this year.
Okay. It's another one of those where I feel gross if I put Kentucky that high on my list. I don't want to give them the satisfaction of knowing they're our second most important game.
Yeah, just, the way they hype up that quarterback and – it's basically either between us and them that most people are picking for second in the East. And I think it's important to stay ahead of, those two teams moving forward.
Kentucky or LSU a bigger game to you, Charlie?
I think LSU would feel better as a win, but Kentucky would feel significantly worse as a loss.
Yeah.
I think it is, like Cam said, it's important to try to finish second in the East, to try to make sure that, Kentucky had their little run where you were down and they've built their momentum, but you're just kind of firmly establishing, hey, things are back to normal. You are beneath us. We beat you last year, beat them again this year, and just keep Kentucky beneath you. Don't let them have that. Just prove that once again, the East is Georgia and then – Tennessee can be that second team.
Yeah, I'm trying to put myself into each game and think about the feelings leading up to it and the feelings coming out of it, both win and loss.
Obviously, it kind of fluctuates depending on how earlier the season.
Sure. Yeah, the schedule matters to me too. When I'm doing this list, it's not just looking at the program and making a statement. To me, it's about what it could also do for your season.
For sure.
I'm trying to think about the LSU game. I think I'm gonna have to give it the nod over Kentucky just because I think winning at Death Valley and beating Brian Kelly is gonna feel more impressive than beating Kentucky in Knoxville.
Yeah.
I also think that the reward for beating LSU would be bigger than the reward for beating Kentucky, just because theoretically, you could be looking at 5-0 coming out of the Kentucky game, or excuse me, the LSU game. Coming out of the LSU game, you could be 5-0.
Yeah.
Setting up a pretty big game against Alabama. Now, do I think you beat Alabama? No.
But
you get some national.
If you're 5-0, you're probably a
top 10 team, yeah.
Hosting another top 10 team, where
and it'll at least be fun.
Yeah, where you can create what would be one of the most electric atmospheres we've seen in quite a while.
And set up your maybe your best chance to beat Alabama, at least at home. Like, mm-hmm. you haven't really had a chance like that.
Yeah, been a while.
The Kentucky game's before the Georgia game. The Georgia game's on the road. So, like, if you beat Kentucky, like, you could maybe set yourself up to be, like, 6-2. At worst, heading into that Georgia game where you could maybe have a chance to win the East there. So, I get it. It's close to me, but I think that's my list. Florida, Pittsburgh, LSU, Kentucky, South Carolina is where I'm going.
Okay.
Hour two in the books. We'll kick off hour three with headlines. Let's talk sports on Fan Run Radio.